Now here's a story of a remarkable creative partnership. At the end of the 18th century, the British poets William Wordsworth and Samuel Taylor Coleridge joined forces for a brief but memorable year and launched a literary revolution, the English Romantic movement. Steve Paulson went to the Quantocks in southwest England to walk in the steps of these great poets and tell the story of their collaboration.
You can almost pinpoint the exact moment when the English Romantic movement was born. It was a June afternoon a little more than 200 years ago when Samuel Taylor Coleridge, having just walked 40 miles, reached the home of William Wordsworth.
When he arrived within sight of their house, he leapt over a gate. He was so excited to see his old friend Wordsworth, and they had an ecstatic few weeks together.
As Adam Sisman tells the story, Coleridge had only planned to stay a few days, but there was so much electricity during that visit that he ended up staying for 3 weeks. Both Wordsworth and Coleridge decided then and there that they had to live close by so they could remake English poetry. Sisman's book, called The Friendship, recounts the creative partnership between these two poets, and their friendship's an extraordinary story because it cuts so directly against the myth of the solitary artistic genius. Wordsworth and Coleridge fed off each other's enthusiasm and intoxicating ideas, and what they did together, says Sisman, would change literary history.
They were groping towards an aesthetic which would speak in the tongues of ordinary men. This is not, emphatically, not a kind of aristocratic poetry written for an elite.
Now, one thing that I find remarkable as I hear about the story, these were two young radicals who had been very taken by the idea of the French Revolution. And then after they saw the horror that resulted from the revolution, they gave up on that. And they seemed to think that poetry could literally change the world.
Yes, they did. And that idea seems to us now rather amusing. But in fact, this year in the Quantocks was absolutely crucial. It was a watershed in the history of English poetry. After this Quantock year, poetry would never be the same. The old poetry of the 18th century would seem old hat, artificial, and all the younger generation of romantic poets, Shelley, Byron, Keats, looked up to Wordsworth and Coleridge and saw this year in the Quantocks as a kind of sacred year when everything changed.
The sheer audacity of these two young men was stunning. Coleridge was only 24 and known mainly for his fiery political speeches. Wordsworth was 26 and completely unknown as a poet. Somehow, they convinced each other they could launch a revolution.
I'm standing on a narrow wooden bridge that spans this ravine with the babbling brook down below. It's very overgrown right now. The bridge was not here when Wordsworth and Coleridge used to come down to this waterfall. It's a cloudy, overcast day, but still quite beautiful. It evokes the mood that they must have felt back then.
They saw this as a place of picturesque beauty, a place which, as one of their friends said, was enough to make a man forget that there was any reason for treason in this world.
By now, this story is shrouded in myth and legend, but the places where Coleridge and Wordsworth transformed English literature are quite real. You can still walk on the same trails they walked and visit the houses where they once lived. Looking up at the huge beech trees above us or sitting by a wild river, it's easy to imagine how these places could send them into poetic reveries.
The roaring dell, o'erwooded, narrow, deep, and only speckled by the midday sun, where its slim trunk, the ash from rock to rock, flings arching.
That's Paul Cheshire, a member of the Friends of Coleridge, reading Coleridge's poem, This Lime Tree Bower My Prison, written about the waterfall that's now cascading below us. Both Wordsworth and Coleridge believed that people would find their salvation through nature. By now, with our long history of environmentalism and more recent talk about Gaia, nature itself as a living organism, it's a familiar idea. But it wasn't back then, when Coleridge and Wordsworth first laid out their nature aesthetic. Sisman says many of the poet's insights about nature came from Wordsworth's sister, Dorothy, who nearly always joined them on their walks.
She was a kind of wild creature in many ways, and they, to some extent, saw the world, the natural world, through her eyes. She would, for example, notice the way the cloud covered the moon or the sound of an owl, and she would remark on it, and that observation fed its way into their poems. She was, as it were, more finely tuned to nature than either of them. Coleridge has a very striking phrase. He says they were three persons, but one soul.
Above the waterfall, a trail heads up high into the Quantock Hills in Somerset, where heath covers the moor. Though it's a windy day and we're dodging the occasional rain shower,
There's a glorious view of the sea out to the west, and the coast of Wales is off in the distance. The British tourism industry has in fact capitalized on their famous poets, recently naming a 36-mile stretch of the trail we're now on the Coleridge Way. Coleridge and Wordsworth loved to amble along these paths, often composing their poems while they walked. Wordsworth typically marched back and forth, sometimes holding an umbrella, but Coleridge couldn't walk in a straight line. He would veer from one side of the path to the other, his rambling reflecting the way he jumped from one topic to another in his poems. Though both poets were recent graduates of Cambridge University, they scorned book learning. Consider Wordsworth's poem, The Table Turned.
Books, 'tis a dull and endless strife. Come hear the woodland linnet. How sweet his music. On my life there's more of wisdom in it. And hark how blithe the throstle sings, and he is no mean preacher. Come forth into the light of things. Let nature be your teacher. She has a world.
Perhaps what's most remarkable about this creative partnership is the extent to which the two poets collaborated on the poetry itself. Adam Sizman.
Well, they were always talking about ideas for poems, but also they would actually literally collaborate on some of the poems. So, for example, when Wordsworth was stuck for a line, Coleridge might supply it. Sometimes they would supply whole stanzas to the other's poems, the most famous example of this being The Ancient Mariner.
Down in the valley below, Coleridge's old cottage still stands in the town of Nether Stowey. Today it's run by the National Trust and filled with Coleridge memorabilia, paintings, books, and a table devoted to Coleridge's most famous poem, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, the strange and mysterious poem of a sailor who, for no good reason, shoots an albatross, which brings a terrible curse on his ship and leaves the mariner compelled to tell his story over and over. What the poem means is anybody's guess, even for those Coleridge enthusiasts who've gathered in his cottage.
It's almost as eternal as a ghost story, isn't it? But I think at the root of it is kind of guilt and redemption.
It has a kind of hypnotic power, that's all I can say. I mean, perhaps it's the very strangeness of it that does have that hypnotic power.
The whole poem is open to interpretation. It's just really strange. And also because he did so many different versions. When Coleridge died, he left like 18 versions.
Anna Trench is a young art student who's written and drawn a graphic novel of The Ancient Mariner, in which she's included herself as a character. She's just the latest in a long line of writers and artists who've been inspired by this visionary poem.
It's really weird illustrating it because he said it was like a work of pure imagination. You've got seascapes and you've got stars and you've got weird water snakes and you've got ghosts and strange skeletal women and then you've got the albatross.
He holds him with his skinny hand. There was a ship, quoth he. Hold off, unhand me, greybeard loon. Eftsoons his hand dropped he. He holds him with his glittering eye.
God save thee, ancient mariner, from the fiends that plague thee thus. Why looks thou so? With my crossbow I shot the albatross.
They coiled and swam, and every track was a flash of golden fire. O happy living things, no tongue their beauty might declare.
The Rime of the Ancient Mariner was the longest poem in the book that Wordsworth and Coleridge published in 1798. That book, Lyrical Ballads, was the culmination of their collaboration, and it would launch the English Romantic movement.
And from my neck so free, the albatross fell off and sank like lead into the sea.
The Rime of the Ancient Mariner may be Coleridge's greatest poem, but it was actually Wordsworth who came up with the idea of shooting the albatross. It's just one of many examples where the two men collaborated on their early poems. But later on, Coleridge and Wordsworth feuded and fell out with each other. It turned out The Ancient Mariner was part of the problem. When their book was first published, this poem was criticized for its archaic spellings and overall strangeness. So Wordsworth took it upon himself to clean up the language, and in later editions he published Lyrical Ballads under his name alone. Their creative partnership had fallen apart. But maybe we should simply be grateful that they collaborated for as long as they did. During that one remarkable year in the Quantocks in Somerset, the two poets created a mindset that's inspired generations of people to love and revere the natural world, even those who've never read a line of their poetry.
It was one of those kind of shifts that takes place in worldview, and they pioneered this. They showed us a completely different way of relating to the world, of thinking about the world, and it comes out of not either of them as individuals, but out of their collaboration. That's what's so fascinating. It might never have happened had these two men not come together.
That's Adam Sizman.
whose book The Friendship describes the collaboration between Wordsworth and Coleridge. Steve Paulson produced our story from England. And you can see pictures of Steve's trip to the Quantocks by going to our website at ttbook.org. The Ancient Mariner is Coleridge's great poem in lyrical ballads. Wordsworth had his own masterpiece, Tintern Abbey. Here's an excerpt.
I cannot paint what then I was. The sounding cataract haunted me like a passion. The tall rock, the mountain, and the deep and gloomy wood, their colors and their forms, were then to me an appetite, a feeling and a love that had no need of a remoter charm by thought supplied or any interest unborrowed from the eye. That time is past, and all its aching joys are now no more, and all its dizzy raptures. Not for this faint I, nor mourn, nor murmur. Other gifts have followed, for such loss I would believe abundant recompense. For I have learned to look on nature, not as in the hour of thoughtless youth, but hearing oftentimes the still sad music of humanity, not harsh nor grating, though of ample power to chasten and subdue. And I have felt a presence that disturbs me with the joy of elevated thoughts, a sense sublime of something far more deeply interfused, whose dwelling is the light of setting suns, and the round ocean, and the living air, and the blue sky, and in the mind of man a motion and a spirit that impels all living things, all objects of all thought, and rolls through all things. Therefore am I still a lover of the meadows and the woods and mountains, and of all that we behold from this green earth, of all the mighty world of eye and ear, both what they half create and what perceive, well pleased to recognize in nature and the language of the sense the anchor of my purest thoughts, the nurse, the guide, the guardian of my heart and soul, of all my moral being.